This episode is sponsored by Kiprun and their brand new super shoe, the KD900X LD, which Shoe Geek Me got to go out to their campus in Lille to test.
Yeah, so explain what you did over in Lille and how much faster were you in the shoes?
So I tested it against a regular shoe, non-carbon plated, and their previous version of the super shoe, the KD900X. This one's 10% lighter, has a brand new foam and feels much more responsive. And I was over 8% more economical compared to a non-plated shoe, which is mind-blowing.
Absolutely phenomenal, because every little helps in a marathon, but it's not just little old you that's tested the shoe, is it?
No, thankfully it's not just me. They've been tested by some of the best athletes in the world. So Maline Roland, the French record holder in the women's marathon, set her record in these shoes earlier in 2024, running 2:24, which is pretty fast.
Incredible. And they are available now. So if you want to go check them out, head to decathlon.com. They're also available in Decathlon stores worldwide. This episode is sponsored by us. We've hijacked it again.
Yes, we love doing this. We've teased this for a couple of months. Unbearably, we've had a few emails about it, but we can now tell you all about it. We've teamed up with Sports Tours International to give you the chance to come and run with us at the Malaga Marathon and Half Marathon on the 15th of December this
year. Yes, last year you ran your first ever marathon, and only a few of us got to witness the pain of that in real life. But this year, you can come and run the marathon, the half, and we're going to try and get Rick signed up to the half marathon too.
That's going to be the hardest job here. There are limited spots, but we have sorted it out with Sports Tours International. So they'll handle all of the tricky bits, the logistics and the bookings and so on. And you get 3 nights in a 4-star hotel, which is really exciting. But they'll look after you. They're the experts at doing this, which is why we've teamed up with them. So basically, if you'd like to come and get a little bit of winter sun, training for a marathon that time of year, I really liked. And this is very close to Valencia, so I'm essentially guaranteeing the weather.
Yeah, I'm not sure we can quite do that. But if you want a shakeout run, an excellent race, an after party and a live podcast recording, then grab your spot now. Head to the link in the show notes to find out more. Or go to trc.social/Malaga. This is the Running Channel podcast with me, Sarah Hartley, this idiot over here, Andy Baddeley, and this lovely man to my left, what? Rick Kelsey. And today we are chatting all about how running changed our lives, as well as answering your questions and talking about some news.
I'm worried. Why am I a lovely man?
What's the problem?
He is an idiot.
Why do you look annoyed?
Well, I mean, I assume you're going to abuse me, but why are you being nice to him?
Yeah. What do you want?
You'll see.
Oh, I can't wait. Let's get stuck in.
So, I am a lovely man.
It's already backfired, it's gone to your head.
My mum would say that, but I've never heard you say that. What's going on?
Well, you're just your hair's looking nice and fluffy today.
Washed it, rarity.
Yeah, I'm just appreciating the personal hygiene.
Start of the month, just nice to wash your hair.
How often do you wash your hair, Andy?
Oh, very good, very good. So unnecessary.
You know what I did as well? I was like, good question. Turns to Andy, remembers he's bald. Carry on. just for our audio listeners.
I remember you with hair.
It's not that long ago, last year. If anyone wants to have a good laugh, watch the podcast and then click back to a video on YouTube circa 2020 where your wife was cutting your hair
in lockdown, and it kind of looks like a squirrel
just landed on your head.
She could only do the back and sides with clippers. We didn't touch the top for about a year.
It was like a small little hedge, just going higher and higher.
And then Tom, who's behind the monitors over there doing Rick's old job, he had a long time spent editing videos of me during lockdown, where I was just trying to ignore the fact that I clearly had a bit of a bald spot going on.
This is very honest.
And then I got to the point where I was like, I'm going to have to shave it all off.
Yeah.
So hey, you're rocking it.
Yeah, thanks. I think you.
It's kind of like full circle, because this was the haircut you had.
You do work it well.
Right?
This was one. I used to run for, I mean, 2 or 3 showers a day was my main motivation for shaving my head back then.
Yeah, really?
Any kind of aerodynamical impact?
Yes, I did. That was my degree as well, aerodynamics. So maybe I should claim that.
Yeah.
Nice. Why am I in the bad books and Rick is the lovely man?
Just because I knew it would annoy you.
Oh, it has annoyed me. Really, so that's worked.
Anyway, to running, because one of the first things you said to us today was, guys, last week we didn't get into running for a good 10 minutes.
Yes, that's true. I'm very conscious that comment is still sitting with me, although we've had lots of lovely people give us some more support for our 1-star review, which said that we...
For our first 10 minutes of the podcast.
Yeah, so if you hadn't listened to last week, we got a 1-star review, but we've tackled it, we've talked through it, and
just from one person.
We've moved on.
We absolutely haven't moved on. But there, we've got some more constructive criticism, which Andy, this one's directed at you. I know you're not up to date on social media, so I thought I'd just read it out. So from this person.
If it wasn't telegrammed to me.
It didn't arrive by pigeon. No. So I'll just read it out. Although I might have just done what this person said. Andy, as you are the boss, after your 1-star rating, can I try and give you some constructive advice, please? For context, I've been watching and I still enjoy it. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I know this is the structure and the content for the podcast, but can you dial Rick and Sarah down a bit? As Rick can't be that dumb and Sarah can't be that annoying. Obviously, it's just for the banter and the entertainment, but get them to dial it back just a touch. And then my favourite part,
Posh.
P.S., was Rick's last running watch a sundial?
What was the name of the person?
I think it was Joel.
Joel. No, me and Sarah aren't that dumb. Or
Sarah and I.
Sorry.
Sarah
oh, sorry,
and I aren't
Joe.
That
Joe.
Oh, here we go. All right, Cambridge, back in your box.
Oh.
Sarah and I aren't that dumb. We just don't like to use acronyms, mm-hmm. and we like to explain things and get them explained to us.
Yeah, but
by
just to
somebody
confirm,
who knows a bit more.
I wasn't described as dumb. I was described as annoying.
Oh, annoying.
Yeah. Very smart.
Twice, I'd take dumb over annoying.
Very annoying.
I mean, I wish that I didn't have to take both every single week. But I do. I have to sit here with you. But we're gonna jump in. I would love to know what running you've been doing, Sarah.
Oh, so last week I was talking about my Achilles.
Yeah.
And it's a lot better. I've been following my strict instructions. I've been doing
You have been really diligent, actually, for once.
Yeah. Can I actually just say, anyone who's gone to a physio or anywhere and has got exercises that you're supposed to do, actually do them. It makes such a difference.
Yes, do what you're told to do.
Do what you're told. But I do think quite often you kind of I've come away before where I've had like a whole routine or a whole set of things to do, and that's quite hard. Whereas this time I've literally had one thing to do, but just for ages. It was like 20 sets of 20 seconds of something. But I went yesterday to the gym, did it. It's feeling much better. I'm doing a 5K run after this, and I'm just keep rotating like 5K one day.
To be sensible.
Yeah.
Well, top tip. Genuinely, there's loads of people who think physios are expensive, which they are, but the people that are going to treat you and hopefully help you back to fitness again have trained for a long time to be qualified to be able to actually give you advice.
Mm.
But they're not as expensive as races that you pay for and then don't get to run in because you're injured. And also, I think there's a perception that physios will often just say rest and then come back again in order to kind of make money out of you. That's the opposite of my experience. Actually, the best physios only want to see you once, twice, maybe three times.
Yeah. And also,
and the only way they get to see you once, twice, or three times is if you've done the exercises in between. Otherwise, you will be going there for
a
year.
I don't want to tell you how many physio sessions I had.
Oh, well, you've had a lot, but you're a very special case in more ways than one.
You are.
But also, one of the first things the physio said when I went to go see them was like, okay, what are we dealing with here? Can you come once or can you come? I think there's an awareness now of that it's not cheap. And to some people, it might be a luxury to go and get that advice. But I think physios are becoming more aware that it is quite expensive.
And there are injuries, Achilles actually being a good one. And this isn't advice that applies to every single injury like this. But generally speaking, my understanding, Achilles injuries don't get that much better with rest. You have to do some controlled loading and having someone that helps you control that and design a program to return to running is really important, and it takes the pressure off you. Just like having a coach, if you've got someone else who's an expert that says just do this for the next 2 weeks, come back and see me, or do this for the next month, or build up to this level before you consider running, or whatever it might be,
I think it's very easy as well to Google and then assume that you're the expert in that field, which I've definitely done. I've definitely been guilty of, well, and 9 times out of 10 when you find
to avoid it, is there an exercise to avoid an Achilles injury?
I think nothing's going to ever mitigate against all injuries. So no. But I do think that preemptive, proactive exercises like consistent calf raises and eccentric, so controlling on the down movement, or holding isometric calf holds where you're putting your calf under load and then holding that position.
Mm-hmm.
Those sort of things, when you're not injured, are likely to protect you a little bit.
Calf raise is very good in the shower. Good time to do it. Just 20 on each leg. Easy.
In the shower?
Yeah.
No, I do them before bed on the stairs just outside the bedroom. Yeah, that sort of thing. So throw them in. So, Rick, have you been running?
I don't want to mention it, but...
ring that PB bell.
Yeah, I got a PB on Saturday. I'm generally over the moon.
Is this an outright PB as well?
Outright PB.
Not a post-surgery
PB.
Yeah. Hello. We do need to... So, Rick, actually, can I instruct you that in the edit, can you please put in some cheering, bells.
Cheering and bells.
Yeah.
All right. Bells and whistles.
Nice. It's in.
Done.
It's in. So I was building up to it. So last week I did 2 runs in the week, 2 10Ks, and then a strength and conditioning work. And then on Saturday I thought, I've got a shot. you know, the weather's quite good. It's about 12 degrees, not much wind.
It was lovely and cold for a PB.
Yeah, and then I went out and I was kind of, I was lapping, you know, around about 4:35 a kilometre. And then,
which is what, 22, yeah, just inside 23 minutes.
Yeah, and then my fourth kilometre was about 4:50 and I thought, oh, yeah, this is a bit tight.
It's not
then.
Flat where you run either, is it?
No, it's the hills.
The so
hills
the laps,
big.
You've got to repeat the hill.
So the last one, I thought it's going to be close. And then I did 23:08.
Oh,
yes, you
did. Yeah,
yeah. I'm genuinely pleased. So happy.
The stats though, because I talked last week about aerobic and anaerobic, about how I did a 10K and it was kind of 8 aerobic and then 0.4 anaerobic.
Yeah.
So different. In a kind of racing situation.
I think this is where Joel, our commenter, has got a point there.
Oh, right, okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Joe.
Joe, was it?
Yeah. So 5 kilometres PB, anaerobic.
Yeah, right, we get it. You ran a PB.
Yeah.
Mentioned it a few more times.
He said that a lot now.
He can.
You get one episode to rinse.
Training effect.
Yeah.
Aerobic, 2.8.
Yeah.
Anaerobic, 2.5. How can that be so different?
Well, the previous one was a 10K, right?
Yes.
So,
but it was
that
only
a 10K
0.4.
PB?
No,
or like
no,
a fast 10K?
No, it's just a easy, like a normal run, easy run.
So there's your difference.
So the easier running should be entirely aerobic. And then to explain the figures you're talking about, so this is the training effect on your watch. They're both out of 5. And the degree of the score out of 5 is the effect that it has on that system in terms of making you fitter. So the higher it is out of 5, the more benefit it's giving you to make you fitter aerobically.
Out of five,
the more training effect it's had. So similarly, anaerobic out of 5, the higher it is, the more efficient or effective it's making you, the more kind of bang for your buck you've got from that training to help your anaerobic system. And it changes over time. So if you just kept doing the same training, but you're starting from a relatively low base to start with, you'd get quite high aerobic scores if it was just an aerobic run.
Yeah.
Because that's immediately giving you quite a lot of benefit. Mm-hmm. But then if you just keep repeating the same thing over and over again, it would have diminishing returns and you kind of have to put in more effort to get fitter aerobically.
I see.
So because you've gone from running a 10K relatively easy, which is almost all aerobic with a tiny bit of anaerobic contribution, that's why those scores are like that.
And this is 50-50 basically.
Yeah, which is what you'd expect for a 5K, I think. Like a 5K is hard. It's,
really?
You know, it's low 20 minutes of effort. You're quite close to your max for a big portion of that. Your heart rate's relatively high. So there's a proportion of that that's aerobic because you can't run 5K anaerobically. But you're getting an anaerobic benefit because it's a hard effort for you.
So is it better to have more of one or the other?
Well, you need different proportions for different runs. Different, right, like if it was, if you got that split, but what you'd set out to do was a 5K easy run, we'd be like, whoa, you're going way too fast, or you're working way too hard,
right,
because
you
want that to be an of aerobic benefit to you.
All right.
Yeah, so it depends on what you're, so we always talk about on the Running Channel, having every run should have a purpose. Mm. Even if that purpose is just to clear your head, that's still a purpose. But quite often if you're structuring your training week and you've got an interval workout, then you'd expect the interval workouts to give you the highest anaerobic contribution to your training. Whereas your long, steady run on a Sunday, perhaps, that should almost be entirely aerobic because that's giving you the most bang for your buck in terms of improving your aerobic system.
Awesome. I now get it. Did you do any aerobic or anaerobic?
That sounded very clever, Rick.
Yeah. I did both. But the one I'm going to talk about, I'm enjoying... When I was running professionally, my least favorite run of the week was my Sunday run, the long run. I love running fast, and that's still true. But now I know how much benefit I get from maintaining that level of running on a Sunday. And so I'm able to have a structured week with intervals, a couple of easy runs, and then my Sunday run. And so I'm regularly running close to half marathon on the Sunday. And this week, the weather was beautiful.
It was.
Mm.
The scenery... Can you picture the fields?
Oh, I can imagine.
Can you picture the fields?
How are the fields?
The fields were incredible.
Hertfordshire, Buckinghamshire, Bedfordshire borders must be incredible.
And so I just want to paint the picture because you guys are very dismissive of my love for fields.
Correct.
These fields were like, so the ones I was stopping to admire.
Did you actually stop?
I did, yeah, twice because they were so beautiful.
Twice?
Yeah. And they were, the view across this rolling countryside.
Oh,
I did stop my watch.
You stopped your watch to look at a field?
Do you stop? I never used to. I've read as I've started.
If I'm with other people, I won't because I'll forget to restart it.
Yeah, that's the special button on my watch that just says field. So I just hit that when I see a field. but the field, it was like the barley or wheat or something like that. Beautiful golden fields.
Well, at least know what's in the field if you're going to look at the field.
It was one of those two things. Right. and the sunshine was hitting the fields and they're rippling in the wind and you get that amazing kind of... And it looked like the scenes in Gladiator.
I love it.
Where he's walking across the countryside. You've never watched Gladiator?
No.
Okay. But Rick and I just... That is really sad.
Sorry, is that annoying?
Yeah. You've missed out. No, it's not annoying. I think you're just missing out in life.
You're missing out.
I'm missing out in life. All right, sorry guys. So I did that
90-minute run. Really enjoyed it. And also enjoyed the Strava community. So I think I shared this with you guys as a screenshot.
Your Strava community are well savage.
Strong, yeah.
I like it though. I'm kind of here for it. So guys, go and search it out. Hit me up with some comments. I'm enjoying them. So Chris Hallett said, what's worse than sock shoe? Stopping 370 meters short of 20 kilometers.
Yeah, true.
that's what he says.
Not rounding up to a half marathon. Although you did perfectly stop it on 90 minutes.
Yeah, I was like, I want to run to 90 minutes. And then he called me a sicko. Thanks.
that's what I mean. It's quite savage.
That is brutal.
Then someone who'd been listening to last week's podcast said, that's not a very scientific workout post.
Love
so
that.
Disappointed. Minus one star.
Yeah, love
tough
that.
Tough crowd. And then the worst one from Aaron. What's the obsession of old people enjoying looking at fields?
Have you ever been called an old person before?
Well, by you all of the time.
Yeah.
When you say things like, I've never seen Gladiator.
Yeah.
That makes me feel very old.
But for Andy, fields can change his life and something that running can do for many people.
Yeah. So running obviously is a huge part of all of our lives. Mm. I thought this would be nice for this episode to reflect on what would our lives look like if we didn't run? And what was the moment where we all kind of went, I'm a runner now. Rick?
I suppose it's slightly different for me in the fact that, I mean, Andy started running early, but I have always run, even when I was at primary school. So when I was 6 or 7, I was kind of doing cross country. So for me, running's been a constant, and it is that constant that's always there, which I suppose when I lost it, when I was injured and I couldn't do, it felt like I was missing out on something. So for me, you know, the idea of how running can change your life, my life kind of changed when I had those 2 years where I couldn't run. Mm. But I feel like it's the one thing that gives me, you know, a pattern, like some security, keeps my health in check and kind of keeps that balance on the naughty stuff in life.
And makes you feel good.
Have you kept a balance on the naughty stuff in your life?
You know, it keeps me more in balance.
It's the relative
balance.
It keeps
me balance. More in balance. Yeah, relative balance. So I think it's a slightly weird thing for me because I know you started running later, didn't you, Sarah? Relatively recently. But for me, because it's always been there, I can't really, apart from when I lost it, it'd be I can't imagine not doing it.
See, I have totally different. Mm. I hated running at school. I absolutely hated it. Always did it. If ever I think back to sports days or, I don't know, running events, if I think of the summer, I was always running, but I was not enjoying it at all. I think I once got a certificate presented in front of the whole school in assembly for running 800 meters, but because I was the only one that volunteered to run the 800 meters after school one day. And like, that was kind of my...
But you did it.
But yeah, I did it. But I didn't get any enjoyment out of it. And I think when I was at school, my year was very sporty. Mm. And so sport for me was a very kind of, I don't know, like an anxious environment because I was like just good enough to make it into a team or I was just good enough to go and do something. So it was constantly kind of fighting.
So it was because you felt that you weren't very good at it.
Yeah, and like in thinking back now, like I am fine. Like I am pretty good at netball, pretty good at hockey, can hit a rounders ball, like fine. But I think because the rest of my year was so good, it was that constant battle of like not feeling good enough if you didn't make it into like the first team or the A team or whatever that was. So then by the time I got to uni, I lost that, I guess, kind of like love of sport because I just saw it as like being put down all of the time. And then just when I was going like, okay, well, I might go to the gym and I was loving group exercise classes because I was like, oh, you don't have to be the best. Like you're just in a room of all other people and like you're doing, I don't know, I used to see these ones called like body pump and body attack. I don't know if you've ever done body attack.
Yeah.
Hilarious. But it's just so fun. Like there's no competition element. It's not like I love team sports, but I'm very much a, I don't mind if I win or lose.
So when did it change your life then?
So I remember second year of uni.
When you met me, right?
Yeah, no. A little bit before that. Oh, okay. Tiny bit
was
before.
Was it before you joined the Running Channel?
Yeah, so I was a fan of the Running Channel before I joined the Running Channel.
Who did you like more?
I was me an or old... I actually remember when I came for my Running Channel interview. Yeah. It was just around the time or a few months after you'd been doing a series where you were trying to break 15 minutes for 5K,
yes,
I think.
A long time ago,
and
right.
I remember having
which
is
never
like
finished that series, sorry.
Yeah, but I remember having a question in my little notebook of like, where's the final one of this video, because I was so invested and like I wanted to know.
You had two questions. Where's the final installment of your series, Andy? And what's the deal with the pensions?
Yeah, I was a proper nerd in my interview. I think I actually asked for that interview.
Yeah, you did. I was not willing to give you the
and
job
was
without
like, yeah, interview. Come on. Yeah. But yeah, so prior to that, that was when I was in my master's year. But 2 years before that at uni, I was like going to the gym, had kind of lost touch with exercise, like was not really doing that much sport, was doing a cappella, which was great. Why do you
Rick's
look so confused? Rick was like,
what? Thinking is, can I ask Sarah to just give us a little bit of a cappella right now?
Yeah.
No, I'm not giving you a bit of a cappella right now. No, I'm not doing it.
What about the Running Channel song, Run With Me?
No.
We've got the rights to that.
No, we're fine.
Do you want me to put it in?
We're okay. No, absolutely not. So I was doing a cappella and I turned to someone in rehearsal and we were talking about running and we were like, can we run 5K? And we were like, yeah, probably. And we went out super early, which for uni is like, what are you doing? I think we went out at like 7 a.m. tried to run 5K down a canal. Worst 45 minutes of my entire life. Like, it was so hard. We were so out of breath. But then we got to the end of it and we like finished at a little playground and were like trying to do chin-ups or press-ups or something. And we just felt like it was proper runner's high. Like, I've never felt more accomplished than finishing that 5K. And then from there, it was like, okay, 2-3 times a week. We'll get up before the rest of the village and we'll just go.
Is that kind of like you got the drug then?
Yeah. And then ever since then, it's just been that like that urge to chase that like
I get it.
That
get
feeling.
It. You know, you said something really interesting and me and Andy kind of agreed with you the week about
kind
you
of
know,
agree.
You don't enjoy every single run that you go on. But it stuck with me afterwards that I found the comment uneasy. And when I was running last week, I was thinking, what of course I'm not enjoying it. I'm in absolute pain now on 10K, it's really hot. I was thinking, why did I find the comment difficult? And I realized because I think for many people, you can class your run not as the 50 minutes that you're out if you're doing a long run or the 25 minutes on a Saturday morning or 35 minutes, whatever it is. I see it as like the broader picture of the day. So how you feel after you finished and the knock-on effects to that day. So by the time I went to bed on Saturday night, I was in pain on Saturday running really as fast as I can. But actually as a day, I was elated.
Yeah.
So actually, it's the day, not the event.
It's not the moment necessarily. Because you run for long enough that, and you keep coming back to it, you've not had that thing of like, I've run once or twice. It's just hard and I don't enjoy it. And then you've stopped. So you've managed to conflate or like combine that experience of like, it's the whole day, not just that pain for 5 minutes or half an hour.
But then conversely as well, I feel like for some people, when you're training for ages or you're running for ages, you then will have maybe like a few runs in a row or you might hit a bit of a rut. And that again, I think you need that element because then when you finally do get a good run, you go, oh, amazing. Like, I'm so grateful I had that run where I stopped and walked or I sacked it off or like I just didn't finish it. Because then this run where I've got a PB feels really good.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering whether you ever imagined when you found this love for running that you would be on a podcast like this talking about running where you'd be the annoying one. Rick could be the stupid one. And then I'm what, the old one?
Yeah.
This is really not doing much good for my
career.
So
it's like
career.
We're like the Spice Girls.
They're going to book you. It's going to be the next... After the election this summer, they're going to be looking for
really
someone to be the new prime minister.
Yeah, whoever that might be. Can we get that done one off that running podcast?
Really not great for the 7th prime minister. Really not great.
That'd be straight in.
Yeah.
Have we got the guy that's had a few hundred points knocked off his IQ by these other two in the podcast as he plays his part? Rick's pointing at me because maybe you care about.
Well,
what my
I was just going to ask you. Obviously, everyone knows you're an Olympian. Mm. Running has been a huge part of your life. Can you imagine your life without running?
No, but for lots of different reasons, and not necessarily because of the Olympics. We talked about it a bit before. It's weird when running, you do something in the, across the playground and you feel the wind in, when I had hair, in your hair.
In your ears.
Yeah. I look like the kid off the Wonder Years, which you won't remember either. I had hair like that. You go from that where you're just racing across the playground and you touch the wall first and you get that real buzz of just running fast, to then it becoming this thing where if you don't do it, you don't get paid, or you're feeling the pressure. I don't think I ever thought about getting paid, but I did feel the pressure of having to do it every day and 12 times a week. And it takes the joy out of it. And then you have those fleeting moments of like euphoria when you've smashed a session that you really didn't think you could do, or you win a race or compete really well in a race or run a PB. But it becomes quite hard. But the moments that changed my life are things like, I started running in the first place because one of my closest friends needed to go to, his mum was forcing him out of the house to go to cross country club. He wouldn't go unless he went with a friend. He called me. I went along with him. He gave up 2 weeks later. I was still doing it.
Love that.
30 years later.
Love that.
And I love that. So I found it. I found it through that. And then the stuff that I talk to kids about now, if I'm doing a chat at a primary school or a senior school, I went to year seven and I enjoyed running, but like I wasn't that good. We'd have interform cross country in year seven. So 180 kids in our year at school. I might finish maybe 15th, 20th in my year at my school.
That's crazy, isn't it? That
is just crazy. So there's 10 or 15 kids better than me, my age, at my own school, let alone in my county. Or the country.
When did you get to the best in the school?
I just kept showing up and everyone else gave up and started like being interested in girls and having friends.
So what you're saying is, to be successful, you just need to be really stubborn.
Show up, yeah. No, I probably got to be the best in my year by year eight or nine. And then...
Oh, so it's pretty quick then.
Yeah, a couple of years.
2 years.
It wasn't like a term. It was a couple of years.
Two years, and Dave Wilkes training sessions.
Yeah,
but that's so true, because there might be some people listening to this though who, like, I think we're in society now. People just want stuff quickly. Like social media has meant that people, there are so many challenges going around where it's like the 45 day or the 75 day or the 100 day challenge, and loads of people are looking at that like, oh, that's hard. Yeah. But like, that's the beauty of running, is that you can't get it overnight. You do need to train for 8 weeks, 12 weeks, 16 weeks if you want to see that result. And like, not, especially kids don't want to stick at something for that long.
No, and I just, weirdly, we joke about the smell of the track in the summer, or that smell of deep heat and grass and mud from cross country. But that's real nostalgia for me, because that was my closest friendships. I spent a lot of time with my dad where he would drive me to those races.
I think I need to smell a track, because we went and ran a track session on Saturday for 100 people. And no, someone walked in and they were like, oh, it smells great, doesn't it? And literally I was like, oh yeah. But I was like, I can't smell anything. Yeah. Maybe I just need to put my nose closer to it. There's a lot of hay fever going around.
Yeah, hay fever's killing me at the moment. But then from in terms of the love of running, and running changing my life, it's changed my life through the people I've met and the experiences that I've had that I wouldn't have otherwise had. I obviously got to race all over the world, which was amazing. I got to train for a long time in Australia and make some good friends out there, and train with some of the best people in the world, travel to these amazing locations.
Do racing. A podcast with us.
Well, yeah, I was coming. Yeah, you're joking, but it comes full circle, right? We ran together at school. Rick was my cross country captain at school. We met in that school age environment, and then a little bit later on, we're now back together doing a podcast. And my coach was the best man at my wedding. He was
who Rick met.
Yeah, Rick's met Andy a few times.
Andy Hobdell, I've met him.
He's godfather to one of my kids. The guys I spent day in, day out training with as my training partners. The people I ran with at university, and you have that real, that's different then.
You're surrounded by it everywhere.
Yeah, we had that visceral rivalry in Cambridge with Oxford as well. So you're really brought into it in a really intense short period of time. Mm. And so again, those guys are my closest friends, and I look back on those photographs, which are printed out because they were pre-digital cameras.
Nice.
And like
that's gone full circle.
That's the magic. Analog photography stuff.
Yeah, that's quite cool now.
It's quite cool now. Yeah.
Oh, there we go. I feel like that's what happens to me. You're just like, you keep doing something for long enough, it becomes fashionable again.
Well, so that's a brief snapshot of how running's changed our lives. And you know, as much as we take the mick out of each other, it's brought us all together. Isn't that lovely?
I love it. And I'd love to hear anyone else's stories to podcast at therunningchannel.com to find out how running has shaped your lives or anyone else's life. It has that amazing power to do so. And this is the Running Channel podcast. Up next, we've got some news, followed by the best bit, which is your questions.
Don't forget, this episode is sponsored by KipRun and their brand new KD900X LD shoes. Now, fun fact, Andy, do you know what KipRun stands for?
Is this a fun fact?
It is a fun fact. Kip run is a contraction of keep on running.
Oh, I did know that. Mainly because you told me just before we started recording this and you're very, very excited
about
it.
Hey, I love a fun fact, but what are you excited about?
I'm excited about the fact that Kip run have this incredible research and development facility in Lille, which I got to go to. I was in shoe geek heaven. I tested the shoes. They genuinely did feel faster. And then the data did bear that out. I was 8% more economical. So I used 8% less energy to run at a set marathon pace in these shoes compared to regular running shoes.
Yeah, you really do forget how much work goes into getting a shoe from the design process to being available to buy. And if you want to buy these, head to decathlon.com, or they're also available in Decathlon stores worldwide.
Don't forget, you can come and run with us at the Malaga Half Marathon and Marathon in December this year. We'd love to have you come and join us.
Oh, it's going to be so good. And there are so many of us coming out there. So you might be able to run alongside us as well. I don't know what I'm doing there yet. Do you want a pacing? Let me know.
Yeah, if you want Sarah to pace you to a half or a full marathon, or if you want Rick to get involved.
No. Sarah will not be pacing you to a full marathon. Sarah will be pacing you to a half marathon.
Sign up now and we can make this happen. This is what we need. But you get to have lots of fun with us. 3 nights in Malaga, all sorted out by Sports Tours International. If you want to join us, places are limited. So as quick as you can, head to the link in the show notes or to trc.social/Malaga. The website has all of the details of the costs involved, so you can take a look at the different options. Flights aren't included, but this isn't a money-making exercise for the Running Channel. It's a chance to take everyone out to Spain for an amazing experience, and the cost is what it costs for the hotel and for Sports Tours to organise it all. Okay, Rick, first up, you've got a new story for us, haven't you?
Yeah, so I just want to touch on Rob Burrows, who died this week. What an amazing guy. Obviously, when we did Running Over Christmas on the Running Channel, we were out raising money for MND. He was diagnosed in 2019. He lived for, 4.5 years after he was diagnosed? So most people, when they're diagnosed with MND, get around about 2 years. So He was incredibly brave. I thought it was just incredible, actually, that the day after Rob died, and, you know, Kevin Sinfield's been doing so many amazing runs for charity to raise money for MND, but the day after he died, they broke ground on the new MND centre that's being built in his name in Leeds. Isn't that amazing? The day after. And that's just a pure coincidence.
Yeah. That's the legacy.
That's the legacy. Yeah. But, you know, we've obviously, the Running Channel, done a lot. Well, as much as we could for Running Over Christmas for MND. A really sad week, but a guy's made an amazing legacy.
Okay, well, we're going to move on from that one to Laz Lake, the founder, creator of the Barclay Marathons, but it's not about the Barclay Marathons.
Yeah, so Rick actually shared this story, and I think it's very, very cool. So he is very famous for being the person that lights a cigarette to start the Barclay Marathons. And if you've ever seen a picture of him, he looks so amazing and like kind of wacky, and he has this check shirt on when he starts it. He is currently completing his own feat of endurance, which has been dubbed as LazCon on social media. So his real name is Gary Cantrell. And
I love that. Laz Lake's actually called Gary.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it? There's something every year where it goes around being like names that are dying out, and it's like no one's going to be calling their baby Gary this year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Little baby Gary.
I think the youngest Nigel in Britain is 38.
Isn't there something like if you've called like
I would love to meet Nigel, 38-year-old Nigel.
Nigel comes out the womb dressed in a suit with a briefcase. Do you know what I mean?
Briefcases.
I feel like you're just judging all Nigels. No, it's outrageous.
You know, briefcases, they're the one thing that have not gone a full 360 in fashion. It's like, because I've got a uni reunion this weekend and we got to wear one of the pieces that we wore at uni, if you still got it. And
did
I've got
you wear a briefcase?
No. It wasn't a briefcase. I had these massive JNCO jeans that me and Andy probably got when we were living in America for a certain period of time. Yeah. And I won't go into too much detail. But and they were really wide jeans. Like they were like you're wearing a pipe on each leg. Right. An enormous pipe.
They're back in.
Yeah. But the briefcase has never gone 360. But I've kept the briefcase.
Really? Just in case?
From school, I've kept the briefcase.
Did you have a briefcase at school?
I had a briefcase.
Were you in the in-betweeners?
Yeah, I had a briefcase.
You had a briefcase in year seven?
I had a briefcase.
No.
I think I came in with it on the first day and never again. But I've kept the briefcase. I've got it.
What did you have in it? That's not, you don't need anything in year seven.
I don't know, but then I thought, and then my first day when I... After uni, I worked in the city, and I took it into work in the city.
Well, I'm going to buy this briefcase. It's an investment. I will use it in year seven, and when I'm 27.
Yeah. Is this why I'm your only friend from school?
Briefcase boy strikes again.
We can't say the in-between is like.
Sorry.
Anyway.
So briefcase in year seven, and then if anyone remembers undercuts, Rick had
what
the most.
Is that?
It's where your hair's right. Quite floppy on the top and all you right. Shave up underneath it all yeah. The way.
Oh, yeah. Rick.
Yeah.
Well, your hair looks good now, mate.
Anyway,
Gary Cantrell is aiming to cross the country on foot from Delaware in the east to San Francisco on the west coast, a distance of around 3,000 miles.
Right.
But I think what's incredible, 70 years old.
Not that old.
Has a number of health issues as well, including a 90% blockage in a carotid artery.
Oh my gosh. All right. Okay. Yeah. Carotid. That does make it a bit more tricky.
Artery. Yeah. So yeah, incredible feat of endurance. I also think it's really incredible that there are loads of people doing things all over the world right now, loads of different feats of endurance. And whether you are running like 5K or 50,000K, it's incredible. Everyone is like running their own game. But I quite like the stories of people that aren't necessarily kind of breaking world records, but they're doing something that is like a feat of endurance, like just the oldest person to finish a race. Yeah. Or like there was someone recently who, we should probably touch on as well, 36 marathons in 36 days with cystic fibrosis. Yeah. Like stories like that are just so incredibly inspiring.
Yeah, I would agree. So now, speaking of inspiring people, amazing people out there, we love you guys and you keep writing into us at podcast@therunningchannel.com with some amazing questions. So let's hear some of them.
So, Freya from Devon. Watching elite level athletics recently, e.g. the Diamond League, night of the 10K PBs, I've noticed pacers being used for a lot of events. Previously, I've been aware of pacers in marathons, but have suddenly become aware of them being used for shorter distance. Is this a recent development or have I just been oblivious to it? What is the benefit of pacers and do they really belong in these shorter races? It feels to me a bit like taking some of the raw competition out of it. I get what she's saying here.
Yeah.
Why do you need a pacer for 1500 meters?
To answer the first part of the question, which is it a new thing? No, we had pacers when I was running and that's forever ago, obviously.
Right.
And there's an additional development now where they have wave-like technology in a lot of the big races. So not only do they have human pacemakers to set the pace, they'll also have lights running around the inside rail of the track where the lights are pre-programmed to demonstrate the exact pace of a perfect pace for whatever time it is you want to run. So if the women want to run 4 minutes for 1500 meters, which is 64 seconds per lap, and that's the way the lights are set up. And they usually have different colors. And they might even have, in a 10K, they might even have two different bits of pace on the track at the same time. So you've got it's kind of A group and a B group following two different times, like the Olympic qualifier and the European qualifiers. That's what they had at Highgate for the night of the 10,000. So
yeah.
We always had them. The question about, the question wasn't specifically why, but the reason that they're in there is because it removes the thinking from the athlete. So there's a small drafting benefit on the track, but generally tracks are relatively enclosed. Certainly the big meets are, so you're not getting loads of wind.
Removes the thinking though. I mean, what else have you got to do?
Run really fast, try to break a world record, try to win, try not to trip
up, beat
other people.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about...
That's the only thing you are thinking about?
Just think about your pulse ox and whether you're 4.5 on the anaerobic.
I'm just imagining a sketch of zoom into
socks.
Andy's brain and the
pulse
Olympics.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing.
It takes a... it's a difficult thing to describe, but it takes a lot of mental and physical effort.
Right.
Mental effort to I guess make sure you're on the pace and it's a strange phenomenon, but if you are just that guy's going to run this pace, all I've got to do is keep up, it massively shifts your mindset and your ability to run that pace. Whereas if you're the one that has to kind of make the running and force the pace at the front, then it is that little bit harder.
And then how for 1500, how long did they pace you for, how much of it?
You'd usually a really good pacemaker might get you to 1100, so to the bell. So, but mainly they'd go a K.
And did you ever pace?
No, I didn't. Funnily enough, pacing are often more lucrative than racing.
That's so funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I might have said this before, but in the races on the track, often it pays down to eighth place.
Yeah.
So I might be in a race with 16 people over 1500 meters, some of the best guys in the world. And certainly when you're up and coming, I might come 10th and run a massive PB and get no money at all. But the pacemaker's been paid $2,000 just to pace.
$2,000?
Oh, and they drop out of... after 1100.
They've only got to do it.
Yeah, well, usually they have two paces. In the 1500 meters, they have a pacemaker to do the first maybe 600 to 800 meters, and then the next pacemaker just to get as far as they can past that. So whether it's another 200 or 300 meters.
Great job.
The wave lights made a big difference because pacers were notoriously bad. So it's really hard, not least because in the 1500 meters, we're idiots. The athletes are idiots. So you go off really hard, like way faster than you need to go because you're jockeying for position and you want to get into the best spot on the track, which means you're going too fast.
Yeah.
So the pacemaker has to go stupidly fast for the first 200 meters and then settle back onto the front, which can mean that they're a crazy pace for that first lap. So that's why the pacers are in there. But there is a good argument about racing and whether it, I think Freya says, it, taking some of the raw competition out of it. You'll often hear commentators saying, oh, it's a true run race or whatever. But, you know, I wish I'd raced in the current kind of, not least for the super shoes, but in the current crop of runners, because when I ran actually outside of the pace races, like Diamond Leagues and stuff, our championship races were always slow. And I was a pretty fast finisher and tactically sometimes got it right, but it's such a gamble. And I was better suited because I was probably training more like a 1500 5K runner if the races had been faster. So if we had natural front runners like there are at the moment, Ingebrigtsen always goes to the front broadly and the pace is always true from the beginning, I would have run better, I think. It'd become a lot of
time. Has a pacer ever just gone, sod it, I've got this?
Yeah, they do on sometimes. I came second in the mile at Crystal Palace one year, really famous mile. And it's the Emsley Carr mile, you sign a book before it. And the book's got everyone's names going back to like Coevet, like, 50 odd years or whatever.
Yeah.
And I came second because I thought the guy in front of me, I couldn't have beaten him anyway, but I kind of let him get away. And then as I was passing people, I was pretty sure that I was winning. And then I look up and the pacemaker that I thought was the pacemaker was still in the race. And I never got him back, so he won the race. But he wasn't the pacemaker. I've just mistaken someone, so it's slightly different.
Oh, right.
But there are stories.
You have pacemaker.
Yeah, you can stay in. It's very hard to do because of that, the mentality of it. So
you just have to play the game. You just have to pretend that you weren't that good for a few races before, and then just nail it.
Imagine. Yeah. Anyway, do they have pacemakers at the Olympics?
No pacemakers at the Olympics. But going back to the early 2000s, Hisham El Garouj from Morocco still holds the world record for the mile and the 1500 meters. He almost always had a compatriot from Morocco in the final with him who would ask to set the pace.
Right.
And so you'd see that guy go to the front, set a really strong pace, which was essentially like having a pacemaker. And then El Garouj would take over.
And then just drop off at the end and finish last.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Tactical. Right.
Well, that was great fun. Sarah, very briefly, before we go, have you got a favour to ask?
I have got a favour to ask. I'm loving the fact that we are getting so many lovely reviews. And I love the fact that each week Andy has such great Strava comments. So please head over to Andy's favourite social media, Andy Babley.
Only social media.
On Strava. And send some podcast love in your own words on all of his workouts this week. Because by the time next week's podcast goes out, he will have run, hopefully, a new 5K time that he's been working towards, so not to put the pressure on.
So yeah, well, that's terrifying actually. It's come around really fast. So,
do you think you'll beat 23:08?
I'm gonna do my very best to beat 23:08. So we can compare times afterwards. Maybe we can compare our aerobic and anaerobic scores afterwards.
Well, that'll be interesting.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah. Right, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
This episode was sponsored by Kiprun and their brand new shoe, the KD900X LD.
Now, we've mentioned that this goes through lots of rigorous testing, and one place that it's also been tested is at 42 House, which is a brand new project from Kiprun where they have incredible athletes out training in Kenya. And our very own Mo and James went out there to visit earlier this year.
Yeah, in E10, where I have trained back in the day when I used to be a professional runner. Have I ever told you that?
Never.
No, I never talk about it. It's an incredible place. It's where so many incredible runners have been shaped in that region. And so it's logical that if you want to make some of the best super shoes in the world and you want them to be worn on some of the best marathon runners in the world, you take it to what a lot of people consider to be the home of running.
Yeah, I love the fact that James, when he brought his KD900 XLD shoes back to the UK, they were covered in that iconic red dust from running on the trails. If you want to check out these shoes, then head to decathlon.com. They're also available in Decathlon stores worldwide.
So we're making Sarah run a marathon in Malaga.
Brilliant. This episode was sponsored by us, which Andy forgot to say.
Yeah.
And apparently I'm running a marathon. I mean, hey, If enough of you want me to do it, I suppose I could.
Or the half marathon, and we need to get something that gets Rick out of bed. We want you to come to Malaga with us. Half marathon or marathon, we've teamed up with Sports Tours International. It's an amazing place to go. The weather will hopefully be really nice, certainly better than the UK weather in the middle of December. So it's a chance to come and be with the Running Channel and other runners from the Running Channel, which are all lovely people, I can promise that. And then we get to spend a few days together, be looked after by Sports Tours International, run a marathon or a half marathon, and then party and listen to us waffle on the podcast.
I think that'll be the bit that Rick's good at. I think what we're going to struggle with is getting him to put down a glass of Gavi long enough to be able to run a half marathon. But hey, stranger things have happened. So if you want to find out more info, head to the link in the show notes or go to trc.social/Malaga.